Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurt Woodsmith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late-night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening to the Best of Coast to Coast podcast. Become a Coast Insider, and you can hear this complete conversation as well as recent shows featuring guests discussing new cases of the troubling cattle mutilation phenomenon, worrisome instances of clandestine CIA torture, and the evidence that the lost city of Atlantis may have really once existed. Check out these programs and many other fascinating episodes waiting for you in the Coast to Coast Archive by heading over to coasttocoastam.com and signing up for Coast Insider.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back. We'll take your calls next hour. Hillary Gamm with us, her book, Billions Lost. Hillary, individuals may say, look, with millions of people out there, so if my data is stolen and in the batch, nobody's ever going to do anything with it. They're not going to use it. What do we say about that?
Good question. I would say, I don't necessarily know if I agree with that perspective.
Right.
I think that our data about ourselves, our families, our homes, our financial status, our education is ours, and it's our property, and we own it, and we really shouldn't be giving it out to whomever to give them access to aggregate it and figure out marketing trends or what have you. I think that today the situation that we have with data is that Americans are freely giving their data away. And I think when they're doing that, what they're not realizing is that, you know, that's their own personal property to some extent. And in addition to giving it away, you know, we're putting data in all different kinds of repositories that are hackable. And I think that's also could be somewhat dangerous to the population. So both things concern me very much.
Hillary, tell me about the dark web. Exactly what is it?
Ooh, well, you know, what happens is when we go onto all these various applications, we put our information in, it's there and it's available. And technology, I think when you hear folks talk about it, they think of all the great aspects of technology and they have kind of a utopian idea of technology. But in fact, you know, technology can be used for things that aren't necessarily great. So when we think about our financial information, banking information or loan information, or we're doing trading and those kinds of things, the dark web gives access to those who would want to infiltrate, let's say, our financial information and hold our finances hostage, or they'd want to hijack an account and take the money from us. the dark web relates to any nefarious things that go on with the technology that we use every day.
One of the things that has changed the face of the planet instantly, social media. I mean, I remember the days in the old news days, you had to rely on radio or television for a breaking news story, and newspapers were way behind, of course. And, but, you know, it was instant, but you had to be listening, you had to be watching. Nowadays, with social media and smartphones, you instantly get bulletins, breaking news, it's everywhere. Has that helped or hurt us in society?
Another fantastic question. So when I think about technology, right, technology has just changed so rapidly, so much more than every other medium prior to it. And that has to do with the fact that when you're thinking of technology, all the different things are changing simultaneously. They're all progressing simultaneously. So it creates this exponential growth. So it's unlike any other industry, right? Because in order to get the smartphone to work really well, there's the actual smartphone technology, there's the hardware, there's the software that sits on it. But then there's also the infrastructure, you know, that whole Wi-Fi, which wasn't available 20 years ago. We're able to use our smartphone, you know, driving in a car and getting directions or tapping into the World Wide Web to look something up. So everything changes simultaneously, and it creates exponential growth. And that's why we've seen these rapid changes with technology over previous technologies. The good news is that radio is still here. I'm talking on the radio, and we're on the radio, and people are listening to us. Television, again, like you said, the next iteration, people could see first in black and white and then in color. And today, with our phones, we have immediate, just as you said, news feeds, entertainment, and communication. It enables markets to react rapidly. We can do trade and trade currencies instantaneously. It affects our global trade. It affects our domestic trade. It affects how we communicate. But what I think is so important, and no one's really talking about this, is so many of the issues that we have with social media today is really, when you think about it, it's kind of in its infancy. Well, when the radio first came out, I'm not sure the FCC was really regulating the radio. When television first came out, I know for a fact there weren't regulations immediately put in place. But American citizens, as a population, as a society, we determined, you know, that we needed to have some kind of regulations to kind of get ahead of the medium and make it basically family-friendly. So there wasn't vulgar language or scenes or things that would be disturbing on the TV. That same kind of idea and approach hasn't yet come into fruition for social media. And that's what makes it so dangerous. Because I think what's happening is we have this idea of free speech, that everything's allowed. But in reality, you know, we've had free speech since the inception of our country. But that doesn't necessarily mean that everything's allowed on every medium, because it's reaching children, disturbing images that could be harmful to our national security and to the health and well-being of our citizens. There's no control. And what concerns me the most is that in every other industry where there's regulations, you know, the government, our leaders, you know, come up with a framework or a paradigm to enable our society to succeed with that new technology or with that industry. But here with social media, we haven't quite gotten there yet. People are seeing that there's, and the leaders, you know, in tech are seeing that there's a lot of things that aren't so great. And they're just trying to catch up and figure out, how do we ensure that the technology benefits everyone in a positive way and doesn't hurt those in our society and doesn't hurt the American way? That's critical, right? And that's, you know, hopefully something that'll be coming soon.
I got to tell you, the technology is just amazing, though. I mean, when people are able to send instantly a text message to someone, or even a video or a picture of whatever they're seeing, you can send that to the recipient and it just beams through the airwaves and it's there within seconds. I find this, Hillary, to be just amazing.
It really is, isn't it? And it's incredible, and it's so powerful.
I mean, do you imagine how many text messages do you think are being sent worldwide at any given time?
Oh, I think trillions.
I do too. And they all make it to where they're going.
Right.
I mean, I've never, other than if you dial the wrong number in your phone or something, I've never gotten a text message from someone by mistake. Have you?
No, you're absolutely on the money on that one.
It's just unbelievable technology. And I guess it's all dealing primarily through what, satellites?
Yeah, and the internet, which we laid out, and again, developed in the 80s, I mean, that all made this all possible, right? The ability to create a unique identifier for every handheld device, every machine, and be able to get it to the right place, like you said, it's incredible.
Where will our youth be in 10, 20 years when they grow up? Because I have seen little ones, and I mean little ones, 5, 6 years old, playing games with smartphones, and they are better than we are as adults. What are they going to be like when they get older?
That's right. The kids of today don't get the joke about asking for directions, right, between a husband and wife.
That's right.
They don't want to ask for directions because they have a GPS.
They don't need it. That's right.
Right. They can't even comprehend what life is like without a smartphone. This is the first generation growing up with technology in their hands.
Now they can't do calculations in their head or things that we could. They have to rely on a built-in calculator to do things.
That's true. I think inherently human beings tend to take the easy way out, right? Inherently we're lazy and we do things the easiest way possible, the path of least resistance. So where generations past had to memorize a phone number, you think of, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, people would do it the alphanumeric memorization to memorize a phone number. Nowadays no one memorizes a phone number. If you have to call somebody, if they're in your contact list, you just hit their name and you're talking to them a few seconds later or leaving them a message. So that whole paradigm where we're memorizing numbers or calculating a mortgage, all these things that all the generations previously had to learn how to do, now it's all at our fingertips, right, with the technology, and there's an app for everything.
It is amazing. It really is. Yet, you say a lot of this has gone overseas, went out the door, and we've lost billions of doing that. Why did we, even when you mentioned during Y2K, why did we flee overseas? Was it because it was cheaper?
Right, exactly. So the reason that jobs have gone offshore outside the U.S. is because the tech labor outside the U.S. is less expensive. And because of technology, people are able to work remotely. But unfortunately, it's a true double standard because as Silicon Valley said, we want to bring all our workers back in-house so they can be more productive, and every other American industry followed suit. So we were trending towards remote workforces and enabling people with disabilities and working parents and women to be in the technology field and thrive. We kind of threw them out with the bathwater when we went overseas to hire tech labor. And, the double standard is, all these companies continue to use remote tech labor that they source from foreign lands, and yet they're not hiring Americans to do those jobs. And that's the primary reason I wrote the book, so people understand that it really affects our economy. And there's a number of reasons why that happens, right? So the history behind it was back in the 70s and 80s, there were huge American companies that worked as auditors, and they were in the businesses, and they understood the processes, and they were the ones who began to do the technology consulting around tax time,
mm-hmm.
And that grew into an industry which we called outsourcing, where we were taking those technology jobs in the United States. In the days of, when IBM was giant, technology jobs were just like any other jobs where you'd have a manager and people working for that manager.
That's
and they were
right.
Doing the work, right? They knew the business, and they were building technology and making that company more successful and providing competitive advantage. That's not the case today. Today, you have companies that outsource their technology organization, not just the help desk, but the testing, the developing, and even our high-tech companies have locations all over the globe where they're hiring and creating these tech labor forces that are called captive. So, and again, people in the United States don't even realize that. So because there's low barriers to entry, because you have remote workforces and you have the internet and you're able to send files across time zones and across the ocean to everyone you want to send it to in the globe, you can hire these really cheap technology labor forces anywhere outside the U.S. with no ramifications, and they can do the work, and you're saving oodles of money. You're not having to pay them benefits. You're not having to train them. You're not having to keep them happy, and they're a lot less expensive. And American companies are responsible to their shareholders. And so you can't really fault them for looking for the least cost labor available. But ultimately, it has dire effects for the American economy because we're not only losing the wages, but we're losing all the jobs that go along with those tech jobs. So the people that do the hiring, like the recruiters, the people that do the benefits, you know, the marketing people, all the jobs that go along with those technology jobs are also lost, and the revenue's lost. And the bulk of my book, what I talk about that's most important, is that we're losing the ability to educate and employ and maintain a tech labor force here in the United States.
It is really withering away, isn't it?
Right, in the digital age. This is we live in the digital age. We live in the era of technology. So when we think back to how America became great, we think of, you know, first we think of the trains that went from east to west. Then we think of the automotive industry. You know, we had plastics, we had chemicals, all these industries, you know, sending men to space. We didn't send out for engineers to a foreign land when we had to put a man on the moon. In that great race to space, we educated our engineers in aerospace, and we got a man on the moon. And in technology, we need to remember that if we don't take that same kind of idea moving forward in this space, we're going to put our lives and the American way of life at risk.
Try calling your credit card company after hours. You get somebody in a different country who's talking to you, wanting your Social Security number. It's really uncomfortable.
It really is. And when you think about the companies that are employing labor from these foreign lands, they're in a business setting, and they're talking to people who sometimes don't even understand the fundamentals of their business, right? People are coding things. They don't even understand how it actually works here in the United States. And so I'm not sure that, you know, because there's a smaller hourly wage that we're paying for these foreign technology workers, their output, their productivity, can't match an American employee.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.